What is up, everyone? Is that the win of the season? Waiting for Andy to get in here. We'll see who's ready. Let's see. Wow. Let's get going. Let's get Ben up here. Let's get Ben Cruz up here to talk real quick. Ben, what is up, my man?
Sam, how are you?
I'm good. How are you feeling after that game?
I feel like it was like a fever dream. It just kind of made no sense, like, at all. And then, but at the same time, when overtime hit and Steph was shooting, I was like, oh, he's probably going to make that. Like, nothing about it made sense. So
does not matter that he missed like 15 shots in a row or whatever was going on there. That was one of his worst shooting nights of the season. And, you know, Steph's going to do Steph things, right?
Right. It was pretty unreal. But, hey, a win is a win, I suppose. We'll take it.
Got to take it. Hey, chasing wins now. We're chasing wins now.
Absolutely.
Ricky, what do you got for us?
Now, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Ricky.
Well, I would have come in – if the Warriors lost that game, I would have said, you know, should they have faked a positive test to get the game canceled? But, you know, this next road trip, you know, it's I feel like it's very important because, you know, you got some very winnable games here. Like, well, for you though, what would be the ideal record over these next few games?
Oh, they got to come away with a winning record. So I think we're assuming Draymond's going to play on Friday. You know, you never know, but the assumption is the late scratch today was preventative. So just looking at the schedule, let me look at this right now. We got Magic, Hornets, Knicks, Pacers. That's your four-game road trip. You better go 3-1 through that. The Warriors better be 19-14 after this road trip. Have a little cushion. Maybe get themselves up to the sixth seed. That's what I'm thinking. What do you think, Ricky?
Oh, I agree. I think 3-1's the mark here. But then again, it also depends on if, you know, they don't play Charlotte this weekend because they're having their issues on their end.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everything's in flux with regards to the schedule, but we'll see. Wait, we appreciate you, Ricky. We're going to keep it moving. We got to start talking on this game right now. Andy Liu, wow. Are you just going to make the smiley picture like your default going forward?
Look, man. Smiley played today. Looked amazing.
Yeah, He played in the minor leagues. Congrats, man.
Looked amazing. I got a question for you, Sam. I got a question.
Okay.
Do you think Steph has too much help? You know?
Were you seeing that where people are like, Dame is doing this without CJ? And I'm like, what is going on, man? It's like, it seems only when players play next to Steph, they become good. Like, I'm not sure, or actually, no, I know for a fact everyone made fun of the Warriors for choosing Wiggins over Covington, right? Like, yes. Covington's the better player.
Yes.
All of a sudden, Wiggins is helping Covington. Dame's doing it by himself. It's just always the same little story, you know, just because Steph doesn't dribble it 15 times in a circle and scowl. He has help. This is how it works on the internet. We know this. It's not going to change until he retires and everyone's going to pretend they didn't slander him ever.
That is the, that's what we call the Kobe treatment. And by the way, I bring that up because tonight was a Kobe game by Steph. Just
yes.
Like absolute shit. And then when the lights turn on, what Kalenda said, I thought it was great. He made all the big shots. And I think that was fantastic.
And he looked upset. Like my favorite part of it was post game, you know, Steph's just, you can tell he's more upset that he missed 15 shots than he hit the ones to win the game. Like just a very, sociopathic. He's like, I can't believe I went 5-for-20 from three. I think that's when he ended at. Yeah, 5-for-20.
It was, honestly, 5-for-20 is insane. Insane. The guy shot 20 threes and what? Sam, you would say like 8 of them were wide open? Like absolutely wide open and he made like maybe one.
Yeah, it's almost, the ones he hit too were all like step backs from the elbows. So, I mean, kudos to Steph, but it's almost like he shoots better when he's guarded than when he's not.
The last one with him losing the ball, then kind of picking it up, then just shooting it right over Kendrick. No, just perfect Steph Curry. And then the dribble, I mean, the dribble and fade to the right. I mean, step back to the right and shoot it. It's a really hard shot for a guy that's right-handed to shoot to the right, to step back to the right. And that's it's kind of – he's more comfortable doing that. Actually, I should take that back. He's comfortable doing either way. But, yeah, I think the –
It feels like he's more comfortable doing it because no one's comfortable doing that shot. Yeah. He looks natural with it. I mean, I think the wild thing is not to get too crazy into the stats, but – those corner or not corner, those elbow threes, kind of the hardest three you can take, right? When you're shooting from the sides, not straight on, not from the corners. He's 46% on the season on like 230 attempts. It's just, I don't know what you say. Like he hits that, elbow 28-foot step back three at a proficiency that no human should. We're watching the highlights of it right now. The ones he hit to sink the game, he hits those at 46%, 45% from the left side, 47% from the right side. I mean, it's just he hits those at a higher percentage than straight on or from the corners. And that's just I don't even know what you do with that, right?
I'm reading the mentions. People are very excited in the chat right now. But no, I mean, I felt like there were a lot of times in the fourth quarter there that the Warriors went decoy Steph a lot, and
yeah,
it worked. I mean, some of it worked. Ken Bazemore, Sam, was that like Ken Bazemore, Andrew Wiggins, and Kelly Oubre, who are all had their moments of fantastic play tonight, and then their moments of like super like what the hell is going on? Like that's really the epitome of all three of those players, but they all had their moments. Like we can go one by one with those guys, but Ken Bazemore made one of the biggest buckets to get them, to get them tied up in the lead in the late in the fourth. And what Ken Bazemore is he's fearless. He's kind of like Kelly Oubre, where he's fearless and not like Andrew Wiggins. But he's also like the best finisher amongst those three guys. Like when he drives to the hole, you actually think he's finishing the ball, unlike the other two. So, I mean, that's really what he did tonight, on top of making a bunch of threes too.
I mean, how much were they missing a player like Bazemore the last few years? But just because like
off the bench, yeah.
You know, this was the type of game where they would have lost it in previous years just because it was like, well, no one's hitting shots, not our night. We'll just call it a game and pack it up. And having someone like Bazemore who like, I'm not sure Bazemore knows if he's up 30 points or down 30 points. Like he plays with the same energy level at all times. And sometimes you need that. Sometimes you need a guy who's just like, F it. I'm just going to, keep making plays. And that's all it took. Quite frankly, I thought the Heat beat guys we talked with last night were a little melodramatic. Maybe not, because that was a disgusting effort on their end. Like I don't know how they blew that game there, but honestly, that was pure effort from the Warriors to just come back into it, right?
Yeah, pure effort. Eric Paschal, let's not forget Eric Paschal, right? Another guy with great effort. Like some of the times, like
by the way, hot mic all star.
Ooh, did you hear what he said? Did you guys hear what he said? I didn't know if it was him or not until I saw your tweet. And then I was like, wow. Like he's what did he say, Sam? He said, get the fuck up. Cause he shot the ball short on the free throw, which I thought is like, that's some Draymond stuff, right? Like that's some Draymond style stuff, but he brought the energy. I think with Paschal, I think a lot of people are like, oh, is he hurt? Is he not hurt? I mean, he's a second round pick bench guy. Like he's going to have some good games. He's going to have some bad games. And tonight he had one of those good games. Cause I think, before the season started, Sam and I talked a lot about the energy of this team. Like, you don't have Iguodala, Livingston, Draymond, KD. Like, those guys don't care about the regular season. But, like, we've got guys out here that are playing for their lives. Like, Kelly Oubre, Wiggins, and Bazemore. Those guys are playing for the NBA career still, despite the fact that they make a lot of money, right? They still want to be able to show that they're good. And I think this is one of the games where Miami had a few good runs, but Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, like those guys aren't Steph and Clay. They're not in the bubble anymore, Sam. Like it didn't feel like there was enough offense from those two guys or from anybody on that side. That's how they came back.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were just, I mean, well, the Heat is another conversation, but
yeah.
I just feel like this one, this was an effort win. Was this the best Warriors win of the season for you?
Well, this felt a lot like the Lakers game.
Right.
It felt a lot like that. I felt very frustrated through like 3.5 quarters till about like 5-6 minutes left. Then I was like, okay, you know, they're down 8. You know, this could be a game and they end up coming back, right? It felt a little bit like the Lakers game, a little bit like the Clippers game. The Clippers, they kind of had an explosion. I'd say those are probably the best wins, Sam. But like in terms of like a sustainable win, like this is the best one. Like this is a game you're saying like it's not that fluky, right? Like they play well enough defensively. They didn't have Draymond. Steph had a really bad game and they still toughed it out with a bunch of guys that played hard and defended and really like rebounded enough. Like, it wasn't like Bam was going 30-20 out there. He only played, like, what, 28 minutes? But, like, I think it was sustainable moving forward. Like, this is a game where you look at the rest of the schedule. I think I heard you talking about it before I came on. You look at the rest of the schedule, they should be building on this and win their next few games. Like, there should be no excuses.
Absolutely. They're flying to Orlando. You know, Fitz voice. First game of a road trip, you know. But it's going to be interesting. They have a chance to give a, you know, put a little separation and kind of cement themselves as a playoff team instead of being that fringe team. I mean, isn't this the Warriors have not won 3 games in a row. They have not lost 3 games in a row. It's literally been like win 2, lose 2, win 2, lose 1, win 1, lose 2, like the whole way through. So this is kind of a defining stretch. Hopefully Draymond's back on Friday. They said Looney and Wiseman will be back at some point on the road trip. I don't know if that helps. Because the small ball thing works, but given the bodies they have, I mean, they can use anyone helping them now. I also want to throw this to anyone who wants to comment, just make a speaker request. We're going to start bringing you on stage in the next few minutes. So we're curious to hear from everyone. But let's see, what else is there to talk about in this game right now? Oh, Kelly Oubre. By the way, Kelly Oubre has been sneakily shooting the ball well for like a month plus now. And no one's talking about it because he had I really can't think of a player who played worse than Kelly Oubre played like the first 2 weeks of the season. Yep. And it's funny how that just kind of, you know, he still makes some of the same mistakes, but I thought he played a great game tonight. I thought he was all over the place and he hit a lot of, shots that save the game from getting out of hand. A lot of, you know, they're down 10 points and he hits a 3 to get them within 7. They're down 12. He gets a key bucket offensive rebound to bring it back to 10 points. Just a lot of those little plays that maybe go unnoticed because Steph hits the hero theatric shots at the end. But like that stuff doesn't matter if guys like Oubre aren't making plays the whole way to get you there.
Did you see, by the way, thanks everyone for joining, for coming out here. I know it's like 10 o'clock on a weeknight, but I mean, what else are you doing? Did you see the transition play where Kelly Oubre, you know, kind of started on the left side of the floor, then like drifts over to the middle of the floor with the ball in his hand, kind of waits for Steph to run to the corner or the wing there above the break, like you were saying, where he shoots like 85% from. Then he makes a pass over to Steph. In kind of semi-transition, and Steph makes like, I think it was like the first or second three of the game. He was like 2 for 10 at the time. And I remember watching that play and thinking, whoa. Did I just, was that, I had a little bit of a flashback to like Andre Iguodala and
Sean Preston. More impressive. Oubre getting 2 assists or Steph getting 11 assists.
Right? Like, yeah, exactly. I mean, it might be the 2 assists. It might be you know, Steph could probably average 10 assists a game if he had guys that could finish every game. But it felt like Kelly Oubre is, I don't want to jump the gun, but it feels like he's kind of understanding how the offense works, or at least how to play with Steph Curry and kind of knowing where he wants to be at all times. And I saw a few other possessions kind of off the ball. Kelly Oubre is kind of like patient enough and waiting. I think you tweeted, Sam, about him kind of setting a back screen for Steph, and then Steph missing the shot, but he's setting a back screen for him. And I'm just sitting there and just, I'm in shock. Oh, I don't know. I honestly didn't know how to feel. I thought he was the most fun player of the game. But then obviously Steph took over at the end. But yeah, he was the most fun Warriors player to watch tonight. And what is he shooting? 50% from 3 in the last 10 games or something like that. So just great stuff all around by him.
4 for 7 tonight. Yeah, sounds about right. He's been playing well. I mean, he had a rough start to his Warriors stint, but he's coming around now. Now he's throwing the max contract, Bob. You know, keep him forever. So we're going. Should we get some listeners on here?
Let's get some goons on. Let's see who wants to talk tonight.
All right, we're going in chronological order per usual. Ryan,
what's up,
man? Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you guys. Did culture make Andrew Wiggins hit that corner three? Yes or no?
You know, that three reminded me the way that he caught it and shot it without putting the ball down. I mean, great pass by Steph, putting it in the shooting pocket. Reminded me kind of Klay Thompson. And I was just sitting there. All right, I'm done.
Yeah, we have substantially cultured up Andrew Wiggins. I mean, we've all seen the memes. We've seen the gifs. Shout out my guy Tommy with the I don't even know what these gifs are. The Mario one where like the culture injection and then he turns into a huge player. But we'll give it to Wiggins. He's played well. The Warriors appear to be making a difference in his career. So we'll give him that.
Great defense too on Jimmy at the end too. Shout that out.
For sure. Just a quick question. What role players on this year's team would you be happy with if they're on the team next year? Like,
ooh, great question.
Yeah.
Andy?
Give me Kent Bazemore back if he's on the minimum. He obviously loves Steph. Do not give me Brad Wanamaker ever again.
Oh, you know he's back. This fight.
Stop playing around, man. Stop. Who else though, Sam? Like, does Kelly Oubre count as role player? Then would you have him back? I mean, they have the rights to pay him as much as they want if they want to, but the tax penalties would be huge. So I think the question is probably only Kelly Oubre. The question is, would you pay him? Do you want him back? Or do you let him leave? Or do you trade him?
I think you have to keep him if you don't trade him. Because they don't, like, who are they getting for a veteran minimum who's better than Kelly Oubre? Right? And I do agree with you. Bazemore, you have to keep Bazemore. I don't know that another team's going to give Bazemore a huge contract. He likes playing for the Warriors. I mean, tonight was the Kent Bazemore game more than anything, right? Like, he turned that game. Most nights, you know, he's not scoring 26 with 8 rebounds and 3 steals and 3 assists. But most nights, he's making a positive impact. And he's kind of a player, quite frankly, they could have used, like, the last couple of years when they were contending for titles with KD, where you're just like, dude, when the 5 or 6 main guys aren't on the roster, it's just a pain, and they could have just used someone like Kent Bazemore. So I think you keep Bazemore. Juan Toscano-Anderson, I would bring him back too.
He's getting a spot, right, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, Mulder and Damian Lee.
Yeah.
I feel like you need one of them. Maybe I wouldn't be mad if both of them came back, but like at least one of them fills a role as that shooter off the bench who can change the energy. So I think that's where we're at, right? You know, honestly, they only played 9 players tonight. And none of them were big men, so I don't even know how many roster spots they have, but that's where I'm at with them.
Yeah, I think, like, to cap that off, they got a lot of nice energy pieces, but you can't rely on these guys across a full season, and that's where you need Klay Thompson to be good, right? You need Draymond Green to actually look at the basket once every few weeks. You need James Wiseman to be, you know, a semi-decent player by the middle of next season, maybe, hopefully. And hopefully you get another guy with the taxpayer mid-level, right? Maybe you trade the draft pick, right? Sam, like, a lot of these guys...
That Wolves pick turns into a player in some capacity, right?
I think so. I would, right now, looking the way that Steph is playing. Maybe not Wiseman. Maybe you need him. Maybe you don't want to trade him. You've invested too much. But, like, yeah, with these guys, like, you can't expect Kent Bazemore out here to score 15 points a game. Like, that's not him. But he'll have a Kent Bazemore game, like you said. Michael Mulder, same thing, fantastic shooter, but you can't rely on him all season, right? Damian Lee had a nice month, but now he's kind of off the map because that's who he is. Like, these guys are not the fringe NBA players, so they're going to have some nice weeks, but, like, they're not Like Kelly Oubre is paid $14 million, and he can actually play basketball as much as, you know, the Warriors fans and us love to hate him for a bit. But like, he can stay on the floor for a season. That's not what you can get out of most of these guys that they're playing right now. So
I feel like we're getting at the main point, which is like, there's nothing wrong with these players. And obviously Steph's still one of the best players in the league. What the Warriors need really is to add like another impact guy. So guys like Bazemore or Wiggins or Oubre or whoever it may be can kind of get into a role that's more comfortable for them in terms of a team that's really contending. Like, this team needs to add one more big time player. And I don't even mean that in the sense of like, Kate, like obviously it'd be great to have KD, but you know, they need to add one more guy who's game to game reliable in the way that like Klay Thompson and Draymond Green have been reliable. And then everything makes sense, right? Then Kemp Bazemore can be like your eighth man, and like random games he'll turn the energy for you, but you're not like counting on him to be that guy every night.
I think of like the way that Jordan Clarkson is playing right now. Like, he's playing out of his mind, but like, that's a perfect fit. Like that's someone, like, he's not a star. Like, Zach LaVine's not, like, he's not really a star, but like, he's a little bit too high up maybe.
Oh, he's playing like a star these days. But yes.
His shot is so butter. Like, it is, it's so pretty. Like, it's beautiful. His step back is beautiful. Perfect balance through, like, both sides, left, right, to the, I mean, it's amazing. But, it's hard for the Warriors to get someone like that, right? Like, they'd have to trade a lot to get him. So I'm thinking of someone like Jordan Clarkson, someone like who the Nuggets have off the bench, Will Barton, right? Like, some type of score there that's a little more reliable. But that's also dependent on what Steve Kerr wants. Like, Steve Kerr likes Brandon Wanamaker, and we know why. Right, he holds the ball, doesn't turn it over, solid defense, moves the ball, right? He's not a ball hogger. But like, end of the day, the Warriors kind of need someone that can actually score, be kind of a ball hogger. You can only have so many guys like Juan Toscano. Because those guys aren't gonna be able to score. They're not good enough on offense.
Right. I feel like the Warriors, like, they have their like eighth to 15th man, and they have like their first two to three guys, but they need to figure out that like fourth to seventh man in the rotation. That's really what we're talking about. Like, if they want to compete next year, it's finding a couple of those guys. I'm gonna move this forward. We got Max. Max, what's going on, man?
Hey guys, what's up? Thank you so much for this. I
Bruce listened, Lee, AV, love that. All right, keep going.
I've listened to you guys for so long, and Andy, you are truly my idol. I love you too, Sam. But Andy's my guy.
You're my guy, brother. You are my guy.
So I'm on the East Coast too, but when Steph is on, I can't not watch. So I think this is the best win of the season for a couple reasons. One, Steph did not play well. Two, we were undermanned. We didn't have Draymond. Three, this is the first time we're three games above 500, on the season. And, I would say it is the best win of the season. What do you guys think?
I think it's up there, Max. I think, okay, so if you were to ask me, best wins of the season would be, so we can vote on it. This game, the Laker game, the Clipper game. Am I forgetting any, Andy? I feel like that's...
I mean...
The short
maybe the Spurs, when they kind of rolled them for 48 straight minutes. Wiseman had like 25, like 20 plus points. But yeah, those would be the top three.
Yeah, and I feel like you could argue it in any direction. I think this is up there. I feel like when you consider how under... Okay, so obviously the Lakers and Clippers are more talented than the Heat. But this is obscenely undermanned, right? Like, there's no other way around that. So I'm willing to accept this as the best win of the season. I feel like I would go with the Clipper game, honestly. Maybe. I don't know, that's me. But
I know why you're going with the Clipper. You're going with the Clipper game because Steve Kerr actually put shooters around Steph and blew the game open. Like, I'd agree. Like, that's a game where you're watching and you're saying like, oh, look what happens when you actually play guys around Steph. But I see the argument for this game.
Confirmation bias.
It's true. The more I think about it, I'd probably go this game. Just because this was a game that I felt like the Lakers weren't sleepwalking for three quarters, like, if not more. And the Clippers, Clippers, like, that's what they do. Like, they choke when it comes down to crunch time. So this was a game that I felt was like, it's a decent team across the floor. They're relatively healthy. Nobody really has COVID right now, right? Like, they got the full team there. Solid defense. But, like, this was a game that you're looking back at it a month or 2 months from now, I think this is a game that they're going to say, like, hey, this helped us kind of push, like, us into the top five seeding-wise, right? Like, solidify them top five, top four in the West Conference and be an actual playoff team instead of, what are they right now, a seven seed? They've been hanging in the 7, 8, 9, 10 range. Like, I think this is something that, along with the schedule in the next couple of weeks, is going to get them to become a real playoff team. And hopefully they get wise.
A safe playoff team who's not having anxiety attack every time they lose a game and we look at the standings. Thank you, Max. Keep moving. Let's see. Actually, by that, we should look up the standings right now. Let's see where the Warriors are at right now. That's where I'm at. So 16-13 puts them up to the 7th seed right now. Very close. They're fighting there. But we're going to bring on next up, Luke.
Boys,
what is up,
Ali?
My man? Good.
Here we go.
I had to hang up the work phone to watch the rest of the game. I was fucking triggered. Hey, how good was it? Why didn't they double step at the end of the game? What the fuck? What was going on there?
I gotta give my guy Spo some respect here. He's not trying to junk it up with gimmick defenses to win. He's trying to win like a man in the true Culture Bowl right now. That's what we got going on. This is the pure Culture Bowl. I'm gonna take the W the way we can get it.
Yeah, 100%. As you guys said, I'm really proud of the boys. They did really well. I wanted to ask you couple things. How far away are you two boys away from what would their record have to be in 2 weeks for you guys, for Andy to talk himself into one of these guys knocking out all the Lakers or the Clippers in a surprise round in the playoffs?
Have you seen that schedule that's coming up?
Do you want to believe? That's what I'm saying. Like, because we had one of those days where everything kind of the blue moon day where like everything gets smiley going off, you got fucking everyone going off. So what's the play? What are we thinking now? Have we changed our thoughts in regards to the front office, what they're going to do? Because I don't know if you boys saw the Discord. Did you guys see the Steve Kerr pod with Tim Falcon?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's an interesting question. I do agree with you, Luke. It's the more they're fighting to be in playoff range, the more you have to consider going all in with a trade. Particularly when you look at the Lakers, like, you know, if the Anthony Davis situation does not look like it's getting better. They don't look as dominant as they looked last year.
100%. Excuse me.
The Clippers are, they're the Clippers. the Utah Jazz, I mean, I think the Jazz are good, but I don't think there's some, you know, insurmountable, there's no team. We had a Haberster on the show earlier this year, and he basically said he thought the Warriors were one player away from being a real contender.
Yeah.
And I kind of still feel the same way about them. Like, obviously Klay Thompson is one player, but he's not coming back this year.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what we're looking at them right now. It's like, how all in can they go this year versus playing the long game? They've certainly loved to tell us this is not what this year is about. They're playing the long game. But like, the more you look at the NBA this year, the more you're like, they're really one player away from being a contender with everyone else. And
100%.
You don't know how it's going to play out in the next month, but I think they have to consider it. If they have a great road trip, if they end up the road trip, let's say 19-14, they're all of a sudden the sixth seed.
Yeah.
They have to start considering making that move, right?
It's human nature, right, boys? Like, it's human nature. If Steph gets hot next 4 or 5 games, right, they should win. They're in with a chance these next 4 or 5 games, right? They can win them. Surely Steph goes to, like, Draymond, they have a little chat in the locker room, and they go, fuck, we're in with a chance here. You know what I mean? Like, if we get one decent piece, what kind of damage can we do? Do you know what I mean? Because, like,
absolutely.
Steph's still one of the best players in the game. Let's be like, you know, he's the best player in my mind at the moment. So what's the, do you know what I mean? It's only going to be natural what you just said, the next 2 weeks where they go, okay, can we really evaluate what we're doing here? Like, Kerr's going to find it very hard to push back on, you know what I mean?
I think the only thing with that is, what's the player? Who's the player? And then who do they have to give up for the player? I think is the only thing. Like they can't trade anybody that they have right now because nobody wants those players outside of James Wiseman and the Minnesota pick. So if you trade one of them, who are you getting? I don't think they get fair value back. If you package both of them and maybe some future picks, then you can start talking about Bradley Beal. But then I don't think the front office wants to do that. And I think that's the problem. And that's why I keep saying, I don't think they're going to do anything like that. I don't think they're going to even come close to that. I don't know if I agree, right? But I just like, to me, it's just like, that's a front office problem. And nobody wants Pascal. Nobody wants Jordan Poole. Nobody wants Allen Smiley Gage. Like, those aren't guys, like, it's not Shea
Gilgeous. Yeah, no one's giving you Pascal Siakam for Smiley. Sorry.
That's right. That's right. Off topic, but can we just not talk about again that Chris Haynes tweet? Like, dead set. Excuse my language, guys, chat, but that was fucking disgraceful. How can you be a media and write that with a straight face? Are we serious right now?
Well, have you seen media? The
Nuggets are eight, and everyone's calling him the fucking MVP, and Steph's running around with two-way players and G League players. What are we doing here? Like,
hey, Luke, you're not getting any pushback from me or Andy.
Yeah. Oh, I think that was one of the most borderline ridiculous tweets I've seen of 2021. That's got to be called out. It's fucking disgrace. Anyway, I know you got other guests, but cheers, boys.
Appreciate you as always, Luke.
Oh man, I was hoping he'd had a Justinian Jessup update. I heard he's playing well again, but maybe next time.
Maybe we can trade Jessup for an All Star.
He's playing Sunday, boys. He's playing Sunday. Sunday.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Sunday your time zone or Sunday our time zone?
No, Sunday my time zone, and it'll be Saturday night your time, I think.
We can get LaMelo versus the Warriors, then we can get some Jessup.
Buckle up. Let's do it. Warriors positivity. I love it. How good is it, guys? Well done. Get on board, like Steve Kerr said. Get on board. Stop hating.
I love it. I fucking love it.
Cheers, guys.
Appreciate it, Luke. Have a good night.
It's cooking. God, he's the best. Uh-oh. All right, we got
John.
Something new. I love it. All right.
What's up, dude? Sam, you the man. Andy. Yeah, whatever. So, nah, just kidding. You're cool, too.
I love it.
And Sheed, you rock, man. But, hey, you know, the Dubs need something like this. They need the energy to come up from their D. Oubre, Bays, they're pests. They needed pests for a while on the championship teams. It's nice to have him now. He better to have a better roster. We ain't getting shit for Poole or Pascal or any of those other bums. Freaking Smiley hitting threes in the G League. Like some, I don't know, useless piece of garbage. What are we going to do with him? I don't know. Right? Like, we're screwed on those roster spots. And, like, you know, they need to do something. Package a first-round pick with one of them or something to get that roster cleared up. But then if we do, you know, Bob's just going to go crap his pants and get us another piece of crap to go at the end of our bench. So I'm not too confident that that's going to work out either. You know, maybe we'll get Steph to recruit some people. I mean, maybe he can step up and do something because it's clear that the front office ain't doing shit.
Who do you want Steph to recruit?
You know what? That's a real tough call because it's like okay, who's Steph going to bring in? But you know, his brother. I don't know. Like, you know, like who am I to have Steph target? Let's find a nice person to have him target. You know. You would have thought he could have recruited people this off season, right? Where's Gasol? You know, where's you know, any other big man we could have brought in here? I mean, it's kind of a shot at Steph of like, how can you not get someone in here? You know, is it Draymond? Is there another reason we can't get someone in here? I mean, what the hell,
John? After that game, you got this energy coming in. I love it. Oh man, just. Shots all over. Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, the players, even Steph Curry. Wow.
You got to, man. You can't be celebrating this. Like, the Heat are awful right now. They're not in the bubble anymore. Like, we shouldn't be happy about this. I mean, we should be happy that we won with a bunch of people under 6'7". Like, that's freaking awesome. That sucks for the Heat. Bam should have killed us tonight. He should be looking at himself being like, what the fuck? That post move he put late in the game, he could have been doing that the whole fucking game.
That was pretty funny. He is not a post-up guy.
I know he's an elbow guy. But he did that. He didn't do it from the post. He did it from the elbow driving in, right? He could have been doing that all game.
Yeah, he'd be a perfect Warrior. Back to the basket, split cut, make the right backdoor pass. Just beautiful.
He's
just
what beautiful. We wish Wiseman will be.
I'm with you. I think part of that was, you know, I think when the Warriors are looking to recruit people, I think they're looking to recruit these veteran players that want to win a championship, right? And they looked at this team. Yeah, I mean, Steph is great. Draymond is great. But these teams felt like, hey, we'd rather go to a team like the Lakers that are right on the precipice. Nick Batum would rather go to the Clippers. They were right there, right? Even Avery Bradley, who didn't play tonight, but the Miami Heat just came off of a finals run, right? And so I think they looked at the Warriors. And
hey, not a real finals. Like, no one, come on. They want an AU tournament in Orlando. Nothing special.
Seriously.
Right. I'm with you.
John, appreciate you. We're going to keep moving. Thanks, guys. Oh, we got Wiseman for Rookie of the Year.
Yo, how's it going? All right, guys.
What's up, man?
Proved that the 2020 NBA Finals was a Mickey Mouse award. Can we just talk about how many teams have come out of the bubble looking like absolute garbage? This Heat team, the Nuggets are looking awful. Let me know what your guys' thoughts on this is.
Andy? I thought he was going to keep going. I was ready. I'm just sitting here enjoying. Just vibing.
I think we need to have an honest conversation about it. Was the bubble a real title? Is it time to have that conversation, or are they going to come for us? Are we once again going to get thrown in Twitter jail?
Steph averages 50 in those bubbles. Are you kidding me?
Well, Jamal Murray was averaging if you look at the numbers in the playoffs, like across like a series or something, it's like the most threes ever made. You've got like Steph Curry, right? At number three, and then you've got Donovan fucking Mitchell and Jamal Murray, like in number one and two, and like what are we? What? And then on top of that, now that you mentioned that, it took six games for the Lakers to beat this team. The thing about the Warriors is people always try to make fun of them and say it took them six games to beat the 2015 Cleveland Cavaliers, which is always the rub against them. And you turn back on it took six games to beat this team. Tyler Hero is a rookie. You know what I mean? Duncan Robinson looks like he's just a taller Michael Mulder. I'm with you. There's no defense. Well, also, there's no defense being played in the NBA right now. I think Sam threw up some numbers the other day, or it might have been this morning because he tweets at 6 a.m. some numbers about just the league.
Hey, starts your day early.
I mean, the Warriors are a top five defensive team. That should just tell you about what's going on in the league now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We appreciate you. We're going to keep moving.
It's nonstop good content from the callers.
Uh-oh. Hello?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. What is up?
What's up, you guys? This is literally my first time on here, so join the...
Nice.
Ready to roll. Ready to roll. What you got?
Ready to roll. Honestly, my biggest takeaway from this game is for the first time in a long time, Steph didn't stop being aggressive, you know? And no matter, like, how bad he was shooting, he kept going. Like, usually he would just start passing and forcing things, and it would, like, literally annoy everybody on Twitter, be like, dude, you can't just take five shots. Like, even earlier in the first half when he was doing so bad, he didn't, like, stop shooting. He just continued. And I was like, I love it. You know, keep going. Keep doing it. Because you're going to get the shot in once, and he got it in the most important time. And another thing that really stood out for me was that inbound pass at the end, why they played one-on-one. I don't know if you guys noticed, it was because it was a weird formation. They changed it on the spot, Golden State. Believe it or not, it was a call on the side from Steve Kerr, because Steph saw it, he got open off the rip. Like, it wasn't even a second, and he called ISO right away. And I don't think the Heat meant to do that. It was just a mistake on their defensive side. And Steph saw it and was like, I got to take this. It looked like it was more of a plan to use Steph as a decoy.
Nana with better observations than Sam watching these games.
Yeah.
Should be my co-host. I think that's a great point with the isolation, because they spend a lot of that game doubling Steph. And Steph, you know, Steph being Steph, and this to your first point, is he's willing to give the ball up. And he's willing to relocate, and he's willing to kind of do what he does. And
And yeah, you're right. This is one of the few games where he said, you know what? I'm just going to keep chucking 23s. Like, that's a James Harden line. You know,
that's his, like, record. That's his career high, I think. That's his career high. He's never done this before. That's his career high, 20 chuck threes. But in that, like, it also made me realize, you know, with other guards like Dame, Kyrie Irving, even if you put KD on there, they get this luxury where they get guarded one-on-one in the clutch all the time. So if you see, like, Dame's game winners or Kyrie's game winners, it's always ISO one-on-one. And Steph never gets that luxury. He has to find a way to get open or get off the ball. So to see him today, he saw it for the first time. He had an opportunity late in the game where the defense made a mental error where they had him open. They didn't even put Jimmy on him. He saw he was one-on-one with none and called the ISO play, which I don't think he has ever been able to give us since, like, late in his 2013, 2014, when he broke out year around those years. Because it was interesting to see for the first time, because I watch all of Dame's game winners. They're always one-on-one. And Kyrie's, they're always one-on-one. So when you compare the guards and stuff like that, it's always interesting to realize that one is getting guarded one-on-one all the time versus this guy getting thrown janky defenses. And I kind of respect Miami for going straight up, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, that's such a Eric Spoelstra thing to just play him straight up instead of trying to trap him and go junk defenses. To your point, I want to bring this up because I have to double check it. Steph is only taking 23s in one other game. That was last, that was 2 years ago. It's the Sacramento Kings and KD's last year. Somehow, I didn't know this, Marcus Smart has taken 22 threes in a game. I'm very bothered by the fact Marcus Smart has taken more threes in a game than Steph Curry. And I don't know how we got there, but I do agree with you. Steph doesn't get enough isolation opportunities. It's by virtue of the offense. But I also feel like he kind of has to pick his spots a little better. Like tonight he got those opportunities and he wanted to.
Did you watch the Spurs game, the one where Draymond just chucked the three up?
Yes. I think Draymond. Unfortunately, we all watched it.
Yeah. And the thing about that game is I was shocked they didn't double Steph in that game. And to end in that, because it was an opportunity available before Draymond didn't even. I don't think Draymond thought that. I didn't even know why Damian inbounded it to Draymond. He could have inbounded straight up to Steph because he was actually one on one far into the court. And that never happens, especially down three in a game on the line. They wouldn't even have fouled Steph in that situation. And I don't know why when Steve Kerr came out and said, I should have told Draymond. I mean, that's something you discuss in the timeout. Hey, by the way, don't try to throw a three-pointer because Eric Spoelstra doesn't do this. And as a coach, you have to discuss that. You can't say, I should have told him after the game because Draymond would not even have thought of that.
Classic, you know, who knows what Steve Kerr should or shouldn't be doing, you know. It's Steve Kerr is on his vibe. You know, to be fair, I actually think the problem with some of the Warriors role players is that they make a quick read with Steph. They're like, hey, he's coming off the screen, he's not open, let's move the ball around, right? And I think some of this is on the player, some of this is on Steve. But there's no issue if you just hold the ball an extra second and kind of just force it to Steph and just get him the actual ball. Yeah, you don't have to swing it the other way that quickly.
I don't think the offense is too fast for some players. Like Kelly, it is extremely too fast for him.
So that's a very polite way to put it.
Like I put it that way because like he is not assuming Steph is gonna relocate to the same corner Steph left 5 seconds ago. And he's over here clogging up that corner. And Steph, when he relocates, he has to go again one more round. It's very exhausting because that would have been two offensive. Usually what would have happened to me, that would have been two different kind of offensive rotation versus doing them all in one place, which is why like Kelly, like I feel this offense is too fast for him. Either he has to learn, like this is all about film studies and preparation, because he's got to understand how to get out of Steph's way, like even if that means watching Steph as he walks around and just figure out a way to let him be himself. Like I know Wiggins found out, like Wiggins is never in Steph's way, like he's always giving him his space. And speaking of Wiggins, I would really appreciate, because I live in Minnesota and I've watched this man play basketball, and he's a freak of nature.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, unfortunately. He's a freak of nature. Like, I don't understand why he does not take the ball in. Like, it literally has to be the most irritating thing about Wiggins, if you guys only knew how dominant this guy was. Like, we used to see practices where they used to let us in to go watch their practice. Uh-huh. And Wiggins, the things he would do to players during practice, you'd be like, that's not human. Like, this guy could be LeBron James if he wants to. That is how great he is. He just chooses not to be. is the insanity part. Like, if people really knew who, like, anybody that plays with Wiggins, you saw what Butler said when he played with Wiggins. It literally frustrates you because you know he can do it. It's just a mentality thing. At least he brought defense this year. That wasn't even part of his Minnesota game. He would literally stare at you and say, whatever. You were getting, like, 30 points on him. Like, at least Golden State, he's a good defender now. But now the issue is, I don't really necessarily want Wiggins to take as many shots on the outside as people, like, in Golden State really want. I would rather he drives the ball, and that really opens up for Steph. Like, absolutely, you have no idea. If they have to double and triple Wiggins on the inside, what can you do on the outside? You can't double Steph on the outside because Wiggins can get buckets anytime he wants. And once he realized that, I think he's unstoppable. Just like as Wiseman, like, once he gains confidence, I think that's the only thing missing in his game, learning, just being confident. He's absolutely not confident at all. He's like, scared. He plays very scared. Once he gains a little confidence, I don't think this offense could even be stopped. I don't think they need another piece because Klay comes back. You're going to get a couple of decent role players in the offseason, and you're definitely a title contender team with Wiseman if you just realize his ability and what he can do, because he kind of, like, is not confident. He's just, like, very scared. He plays scared, and you can't play scared in the NBA.
The chat is saying we should give Andy spot on the podcaster, and then there's, like, five other people asking if you're willing to put in on the Dunked On podcast, have her replace Fitz. You have some fans right now. We'll give you that. But I do agree with you. You are right. Wiggins, no matter how well he plays, it's frustrating because you're like, you know he's capable of more. You see that one you see that highlight play from me, you're like, why don't you do that more often? Why don't you do that more often?
Yeah. Like, I know we got comfortable. He started shooting 40% from the 3-point line, but
yeah, that's not lasting.
People only understood. Yeah, it's not going to last, but if you, because he's not a shooter, if people only understood how dominant this guy is in the paint, like, he's actually 6'8". People don't realize he's not as short as people make him as. He's 6'4" who can literally jump above a 7-footer. He's extremely athletic. He cannot be stopped if he chooses to put that in his head. Like, we used to see, I actually met Wiggins in real life, and his barber is my cousin. We used to be in Minnesota, Kutu, and people would have these chats with him. Like, and he would just sit there and say, like, you know, he doesn't know why he does the things he does on the court. Like, the guy just needs a personal, I don't know, life coach next to him or something, because he's he's capable of this. Not like he doesn't have the talent. That's the issue. Like, it's one thing if you say you don't have the talent and people can give up on you, like most other, like, first round picks, they give up on you because you clearly don't have the NBA talent. With Wiggins' case, he's got the talent, just not using it. And that's a rare case because you've never seen somebody with the talent who doesn't utilize.
Get that barber to get him to fix that beard, first of all. That's my first.
Oh, product. He doesn't have him anymore because he looks rough now that he's in California, because he wasn't looking like this in Minnesota. Because he's a Minnesota barber. You can't come, like, the guy only flies over there here and there for him, but he has got a big clientele here because he's the same barber for Carl Anthony Towns and D'Lo and all those guys because he's still here.
Yeah, Wiggins don't speak either. That's the one thing. You talk about confidence and you talk about the skill stuff. Like, He doesn't talk. He doesn't talk to media. There's no features done on the guy. He doesn't seem to speak to anyone even off the record. So I don't know. He's a character in the way that he has no character, it seems, or no personality. But
yeah, there's no good fire.
Season. There's no fire. I mean,
players need,
I guess,
that. Like,
there's only so much. Yeah.
Sometimes when you watch the game and, I don't know, people get mad at Draymond Green when he gets technical, I love it because it puts a fire on the roster. You need that sometimes. Sometimes you need to have that extra push with Andrew. If he developed that, if Wiggins developed some type of, you know, fire in his game, he would be feared way more than he is right now. Because right now you look at him, he looks like a very passive guy. Just like, you're not really bothered by him, even if he's shooting 40% from the 3-point. Like, you look at him like, yeah, whatever. Like, you're not scary, buddy. Kind of like when people look at Carl Anthony Towns, because he's extremely talented. Like, never seen a center who can get you 30 points on, like, 10, 15 shots, can hit over 40% from the 3-point line while attempting 7 3-pointer, and nobody fears him. You walk into Minnesota, you don't fear anything about him because there's no fire to that person, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's how long Draymond Green can yell at him. He's got another season left, so.
Absolutely.
All right, Nana, we appreciate you. We're going to keep moving.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Antonio, what is up?
Damn, can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you. What's going on, man?
It's crazy. I was going to go on. I was going to say two things. One, just a note from the game. It was hella interesting. Like, I kept seeing, like, Wiggins and Butler, like, talking and laughing, and I couldn't help but wonder what they were talking about. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like, I don't know. I wonder if Butler was giving him props or what, because they were smiling and stuff. And I'm like, you know, I mean, you know, the Minnesota story.
Can we talk about this? So remember the whole Jimmy Butler trying to get out of town stories? And he was trying to force a trade. And we all assumed he had a major issue with Wiggins. And I feel like as time's gone on, it might have been more of a Carl Anthony Towns thing. I don't know. I want Andy's opinion on this one. I need to know where Andy lies on this one, because, you know, Jimmy was just trying to raise hell to get out of town, which, you know, the NBA has proven if you make enough noise, you will get what you want, because no one's ever going to tell you no. But I was, you know, do you think he had a bigger issue with the Wolves, with Wiggins, or with Towns, or both?
Sam asking me, this is fun. Yeah, I think he had a big, look, I love Cat. You know, if the Warriors could trade for Cat, would do that in a second. But yeah, the issue was with Cat, right? Cat cares more about the numbers. I think part of the numbers than winning, I think part of that is like the organization that you go to, which is like kind of sucks for Anthony Edwards. It's like, can you turn around the culture? Oh my, I can't believe I just said that. I did not actually mean to say that. But it's
culture.
Minnesota culture.
Yeah. Right, Antonio? Like that's the thing. Like, to me, it's some of this is nature nurture stuff, but with a lot of these players, like, if you're put in a good situation, like Steph Curry would have been great anywhere. You put Steph Curry on the New York Knicks, like,
oh, he would have changed the Minnesota culture.
Steph turned the Warriors culture. The Warriors were the Knicks and the Wolves.
Yeah.
So,
and the second quick thing, I feel like I might waste a chance of time because everybody get mad at me, but like, I'm a big fan of Jordan Poole. And it just frustrates me. Like, I just really, like, after today, I don't know if you guys saw the game, it made me want to give up on him, but then not. Like, last game, he dropped 32, right? He had one play where he just throws the ball hella in front of him, does a freaking step back from the left wing, and just makes a four-point play, and it's freaking amazing. And then today, it's weird. Like, he obviously has the dumb foul where he gives up the four-point play, but before that, he has an and-one to make them go up by 4 points. And then in overtime, he has a sweet assist, and then he has this good drive to the rim where he does that D-Wade ball fake, and then he hits the layup. And then after that, he gives up and-one and almost gives up the game. And it's like, I see the flashes of him being like a mini Jordan Clarkson, like almost. But it's just like, is it just time to quit on him? Like, I know people have been quit on him, but like, I see it. It's just like, I'm just stubborn. I keep thinking he's going to do something.
Here's the thing. First of all, Antonio, thanks for tapping in. 55 minutes. We're talking about Jordan Poole. Shouts to you. Here's the thing about like fringe NBA players, right? Like Bazemore and Mulder and Damian Lee, is that like they'll have some good moments, then they'll have some shitty moments. Here's the thing about Jordan Poole. He's a fringe G League player. So he'll have some good moments in the G League, then he'll have some really bad moments. He made two of the dumbest fouls I've literally ever seen in my existence as a basketball fan, from middle school to now at the end of the game. And like, to me, it's like, if you're averaging 25 points on 25 shots in the G League, look, he's not Jacob Evans. Jacob Evans couldn't average 4 points in the G League. So it's like, all right, like that was a miss. At least Jordan Poole can score. But if you're just showing flashes in the G League, actually, let's just talk about Alan Smalagic. Because at least he had 19 points efficiently. He actually looked like he was the best player on the court when he played, right? At no point does Jordan Poole feel like that type of guy.
Congratulations.
I'm going to let you take over here, Sam.
Oh, I have nothing else to add to it. It's just, I mean, your point stands. I think, to me, this is going to be a topic we're going to get into later in the season, but it's like the Warriors are one of the only teams who are sending multiple roster players to the G League bubble. It's cool that they show out there, but like you have NBA players on a G League roster. It kind of speaks to poor player valuation. And I mean, there's a lot of dudes out there who are whatever the NBA equivalent of a 4A player is, where you're like, they're clearly a good basketball player, but they're not quite good enough to be NBA players. And Jordan Poole is kind of floating in that range. For me, he just needs to become a much better shooter. He can be an NBA player if that shot becomes a little more automatic. But right now, it's still not there. Antonio, we appreciate you. We're going to keep moving.
All right, thanks.
JM Stein. or Jim Stein.
What's up, guys?
What is up?
Hey, you guys. I usually only listen to you guys, but every once in a while, I peek in on the Athletic guys. And Marcus this week talked about like just kind of underrating the West in general. And is it crazy to think that they could be like kind of a fringe contender? And I kind of think he's right, even though he didn't even really want to make the take. Like these top teams aren't that good. It wouldn't take that much for us to like be in a competitive series with these teams. Do you guys agree with that at all?
I think they need one player. I agree with MT in the sense of none of these West teams are that good. Like the Warriors to me are one player away. If Klay was healthy, I would feel pretty confident about their ability to compete or at least feel a little better about it in some way. But without Klay, I still feel like they're at least a player short at minimum. And I think that's MT's broader point because I've talked with him about it. It's like, you know, the Lakers are good. The Clippers are good, but they're not so good that you are sitting here going, all right, we should just play for next season and like, because we need to add five players to compete with them. To me, the Warriors just, you know, if there's an opportunity to make a big trade, they should consider it because they're not that far off of those teams. Just, you know, I don't know if that trade exists, but like they're a player-ish away from being able to compete with those teams.
And that brings us to the Minnesota pick and the trade deadline and Zach LaVine and Bradley Beal. I had him as I had him as getting a couple tweaks, like maybe a PJ Tucker or a Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose just got traded, but Nemanja Bjelica, someone like that, right? Like if they can get another solid role player, I did have him finishing the season as a top four seed and a top five defense. They're a top five defense. I don't know if they'll actually end up a top four seed. The Phoenix Suns are pretty good. But yeah, I'm with Sam. Like you're probably one piece away. I don't know if that piece needs to be a superstar. But
needs to be an impact guy, though.
Yeah, like it can't be Jordan Clarkson, which is what I just talked about. It can't be that. Like that guy's not throwing him over the hump. But here's the thing. Here's the other thing. AD, whatever he's going through, he's out for a month. And who knows what's going to happen. Like just because he comes back doesn't mean he's healthy. Paul George. Seems like his injury is actually worse than AD's. Like, it seems like he might actually be out for longer. Those are the two best teams in the West. Like, and then other than that, you've got the Utah Jazz playing out of their minds. But, like, you know, I don't know. The Warriors have probably a puncher's chance or a little bit better than that if they're playing them in a series, right? Denver Nuggets, Phoenix Suns. Like, I don't – like, they don't have to beat all of those teams. Like, they have a shot at it. It's kind of dependent on the injuries on the LA teams. But, yeah, I think they have a shot at it. But they do need to get one more guy. I'm kind of enamored, Sam, with Zach LaVine, but see if we can get that done.
I am too. I mean, anytime you see a dude who's shooting 52, 43 from the field, I mean, it's very easy to fall in love with LaVine who doesn't miss anything. Let's keep moving.
Oh boy.
Appreciate James Stein. Oh, we got a man with a James Harden avatar here. Josh, what is up, my man?
Oh no.
Hello?
Yeah, Josh, can you hear us?
Hey. How's it going? Thanks for letting me call in a little bit. I just to get back to tonight's game a little bit, I have a simple message, which is that it's Kent Bazemore's world and we're all just living in it.
I agree with you.
I've got a couple fun advanced stats here for Baze just to highlight the season he's having and then maybe talk a little bit about the role he's playing on the team. The first is, in terms of the Warriors' two-man lineups, two of the top three are Bazemore lineups. So it's Draymond and Loon at 4.7 plus, Curry and Bazemore, and then Draymond and Bazemore. And the second one, which is a Bazemore individual stat, which I think is great for him, is this would be the first season he's ever had a positive net rating. As closest he came was in 2015-16 with Atlanta. He was -1. This year he's 113-0 rating and 107-D rating. +6 would be by far his best year. And I think you see it on the floor, the impact he makes, not just with the shooting, but finishing a little bit inside and just kind of playing in Steph's rhythm and understanding that the priority on the floor is getting a good shot. And usually that means a Steph shot, but sometimes that means relocating and finding something open in the corner. So I mean, does getting Bazemore some more minutes, especially as you get down the stretch, solve some problems for you where we've been struggling to find consistent shooting guys who can hang in there defensively?
Kent Bazemore kind of is who he is, right? And do you remember in the first 10 games of the season who played over him?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Like, I think part of the answer to that question is kind of just like, it's kind of up to Steve Kerr. Like, Steve Kerr knows who Kent Bazemore is. Like, the NBA knows who he is, right? Like, he got some offers that were probably higher than the minimum contract, but, like, not that much higher. And so he chose the Warriors. He chose Steph because that's his boy. And he wanted to play with the Warriors. And I think so part of that is like, yeah, he deserves it 100%. I think Michael Mulder should have played more. Damian Lee probably should have played more, right? Jordan Poole should have never sniffed the court. But I think part of it is like kind of what Steve Kerr wants to do with the guys. Kent Bazemore has a mix, a lot of bad plays or like lower IQ plays, like bad passes, some defensive lapses. And those, I think, are some pet peeves that Steve Kerr doesn't want to deal with. Which is kind of the reason why Michael Mulder never plays or doesn't play enough unless he absolutely has to, is that Steve Kerr is just, he'd rather have a guy like Brad Wanamaker who doesn't make as many mistakes, kind of plays a little bit of defense versus the guy that you know, may bring more of a spark off the bench. So I'm with you. He should. But, you know, who knows what Steve's up to? He's always up to something.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. Bazemore is one of my favorite players on the roster, but they need to do a little better there. Josh, what else you got for us?
I mean, you know, I think just a little bit more on Bazemore. I'm having fit syndrome because I feel a need to point out a positive signing by the front office. But I mean, right, for the vet minimum, you know, I think it's hard to feel like that's anything but a big success. And if it's a Steph culture thing, then thanks Steph for bringing in a guy who maybe could have found something a little bit better elsewhere. But in terms of guys that, you know, when you start to think about playoff minutes, this is kind of going off a comment that someone made earlier. You know, you start to wonder whether you're better off just not playing someone like Brad Wanamaker in the playoffs if he's going to play at this level the entire year. And I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what Kerr does with the rotations down the stretch, because you're going to want to see the final 15, 20 games looking something like the rotations you'd want to run in the playoffs. And I, you know, not just because of the big scoring night tonight, but just because I think because of the energy he brings, and just because he, you know, for all the boneheaded plays that some of these guys can make, I mean, some of the Wanamaker plays just like truly defy logic. Just like, I'm going to drive in a 3-on-1
situation. So do you think, let me ask you this, Josh. So if the Warriors make a deal at the deadline, would you say your number one want is a ball handler so that maybe Brad Wanamaker is not a necessity in the rotation?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit along the lines of Alonzo move. Obviously that's sort of optimistic. I sent a random trade in the chat a while back. That's like a Patty Mills move if the Spurs are looking to, you know, do something, but someone like that who can make some shots when they, you know, when they're open and just understands that. I mean, I think really more than anything, it's understands that the priority in the game is to get Steph Curry a good look. And then if you're not getting Steph Curry a good look and you haven't taken 15 seconds of your offense to figure that out, or, you know, a wide open dunk, that you've made a bad play. And I think Bazemore understands that. You know, you see him waiting and hesitating some plays before he decides he's going to go try to get his own shot. And I think that's an underrated quality, just waiting to see if something develops that isn't his look, which a lot of guys in this roster are starting to sort of figure out, but it's taken them a bit.
No, I agree with you. I agree. I mean, it's like, don't we feel this way during every game where it's like, oh shit, Steph's going to the bench. What is going to happen in these 6 minutes? And that just speaks to inability to generate offense. It's funny, cause I remember like with the Livingston years where it's like, oh, they can't get offense when Steph's on the floor. And then, you know, you move on to an even worse roster. Like, you know what? We were probably complaining a little too aggressively with that one. Like, it could get a lot worse than that. You get Brad Wanamaker in here. To be honest with you, I don't think Wanamaker is as bad as he's looked. I just don't think he's – I don't think he's that guy. I think he's a role player who plays defense and can hit an occasional shot around someone, but he's asked to run a second unit. He's just not that guy.
Yeah, and I think it shakes his confidence. I mean, you can see it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's like one of those things where you're just like, you know, you're waiting and it's a bad situation for everyone around. Josh, we appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
Keep this moving. We're going to get to the last caller here. We're going to get Samuel.
So, whoa, what the picture? Is that really, Sam, is that really you with that? Is that a kangle?
That's really me. Yeah.
What a legend.
What's going on, fellas?
Good, man. What you got?
All right, I just got one statement. So LeBron's whining about MVP votes last year and post-finals, I want my damn respect speech. We're clearly part of a conscious attempt to coerce media into appeasing his thirst for another MVP award after an 8-year dry spell. Do you think any voters will have the courage to not capitulate to these totalitarian demands and will instead choose to uphold the pure, honest, lucid basketball of the people?
We're going to second hour. Andy, block your car. We're going till midnight. This is the best call. I've got new life.
That was beautiful.
I think so. You do bring up a good point. I think it's worth exploring. Do you think, because is LeBron playing like an MVP to you right now, Andy? Let's just start here. Is he playing like an MVP to you?
He is the best player on the best basketball team in the NBA.
Except for the Utah Jazz, who are better.
I mean, I guess when I say best, I mean, like, who do I think is actually the best versus the best record? But
falling for that Nike propaganda.
I don't think he's playing better than Steph Curry or Kevin Durant was when they were playing together. I don't think he's playing better than James Harden was in the past. When he's on the Houston Rockets, Giannis Antetokounmpo certainly doesn't have the stats, but yes, keep going. Sam?
I think he's going to win the MVP. I'm not even opposed to him winning the MVP.
I agree.
But it is a, if we're being honest with ourselves, the players who are evoking the most emotion in terms of, I need to watch them every night, it's Steph Curry. It's Damian Lillard. It's maybe the Brooklyn Nets. Like, I don't know who on the Nets to circle out, but I know I want to see what kind of weirdness they do every night, including like Kyrie staging up an arena. I don't think that the Lakers are evoking the emotion of an MVP. And I don't know how much that matters. Let's just be real. I don't know how much it matters, but like, when I think of an MVP, I think of the guy that everyone wants to watch, the guy who makes the television go. And I just don't think the Lakers matter, to be honest with you. Like, at no point am I dying to watch them play with their food for three quarters and then just to pound the offensive glass in the fourth quarter and get a W. Like, there's nothing about their game.
The Lakers are I agree. There are a bottom 10 teams in terms of entertainment in the league. Like, if you guys listen to the last podcast that we did with Andrew Sharp, he had a great line. Anthony Davis is a very boring basketball player in a very boring basketball career he's played so far. And watching this Lakers team, there's no – like, people come to watch Steph Curry. Like, that is by far the most entertaining player and the best player in the league. And I think that a lot of this stuff, you know, Luke came on, you know, 20 minutes ago and talked about Chris Haynes and Damian Lillard. And I think when you talk about narrative stuff, that's what the NBA media, that's what their job is, not actually covering the league now. Their job is more so like who to give praise to so that they can give access to. Like, it's not a dirty little secret. It's not things that anybody doesn't know here. Like, you guys all know this. People will tweet stuff and give stories, fluff stories, just so they can get extra access, right? But the numbers bear, like, the numbers are what they are. Like, the people don't watch the Lakers. They won the championship last season, and people did not care. Nobody hates the Lakers, but nobody, like,
loves them. They invoke apathy. Yeah. That's the thing. I used to hate the Lakers growing up. Like, there's nothing I hated more than Kobe Bryant. And, you know, that changed over time. But, like, I don't think anyone hates this Laker team. Everyone's just like, oh, they're yeah, cool. They're KCP, fine. Good defender. Yeah. You know, it's just, it's boring. It's like, you have to like evoke emotion out of people in one way or another. And they are just indifferent. It's just the most perfect team possible for LeBron right now. Because no one will criticize them because no one cares enough to, because they're afraid of getting backlash for having a take about the Lakers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Facts.
All right, we're going to end the show here tonight. We appreciate everyone who showed up. We'll be back soon. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, guys.